Hello, welcome back to Country Roads Confidential here at earsports.com, part of the 24/7 Sports Network. I am Mike Casazza. I'm staring out of the press box window here at Mount Air Field. Getting chilly. Rain is coming down a little bit harder now, and very symbolic of what we see and how we feel at this stage of the season now. For the first time since 2013, West Virginia not eligible for a bowl game. Hard to believe when you figure this team was 3-1. Not too hard to believe when you figure it's a first year. There are a lot of personnel and philosophical issues that this team is confronted from start to finish, front to back here. We're nearly at the end, but it's a 4-7 record. Following a 20-13 loss to Oklahoma State. Maybe closer than people thought. Maybe not the outcome people expected based on what they saw on the field. And here to discuss what's right, what's wrong, what's heads, what's tails, is Chris Anderson. Chris, your Christmas and New Year are free now. Congratulations.
Thanks a lot, Mike. I really appreciate that. Looking forward to it. First time in a while. But you mentioned first time since 2013. Are you higher or lower now than you were after that year, after that 4-8 season? What do you think? Do you think this program is in a better spot now than it was then?
It's a really good question. It's a really good question because we're not far removed from the high heights of Greer, Sills, Jennings, but never, you know, a 10-win season, never whatever the equivalent of the BCS game is now. And such prodigious talent from Geno and Tavon and Stedman and really good defenses too that people tend to forget about that fell off a cliff after that. You know, 5-0. First five games in the Big 12, suddenly 5-5, and then reality really strikes next season. But I think you saw with the win against Oklahoma State late in that season, Clint Trickett was your quarterback. Things look different. Things look better. There are parallels right now. This roster is in better shape, I believe. It's not going to need the influx of junior college talent. I think there's a lot of first and second year players who can make a leap in the offseason or who had better make a leap in the offseason. But to have a quarterback now, too, who is steady and reminds me of previous passers here. I don't want to throw that name out there again, but I think you're seeing flashes of it, but not prolific in the same regard. But I think when you look at the number of people who are coming back, the class they're in, and then again, how much junior college talent you don't need, which means you won't be doing this again in 1 or 2 years, kind of like the footing of the program has here as opposed to there.
Breaking news, Mike Casazza compares Jared Diggie to Will Greer. The second coming. All right. It is up. It is ready to go. Front page, Mike.
You see a little bit of it, though, don't you?
Like, God, that touchdown pass to Campbell. I mean, in the good and the bad ways, the completely off the back foot, worst mechanics you've ever seen as he's throwing it. Oh, my God, what are you doing? Perfect lob because he knows that there's no deep guy. So as long as he throws it long enough, it doesn't matter. And right on point, right over Campbell's shoulder, touchdown. I mean, you could have told me that was a Will Greer highlight, and I would have believed you 100%.
There was a play in the first quarter, too, that I'm not disagreeing there, but I think the one that really got me, too, was in the first quarter where he just kind of sidestep, and he had a huge amount of space in front of him, and I thought he was going to run it, move the chains, and Greer did this spot where he would run, and then he'd see something, and he'd pass it instead, and he flicked it ahead to, I want to say Campbell, it might have been Simmons, I'm not sure, but it was a 12 or 15 yard gain instead of a 6 yard run, but just that throw on the run and like always looking for something. It's better than what they had. And it's not completely different from something you can build on when you consider who was the quarterback here, you know, for two seasons last year and the year before. I don't think he's going to put up the numbers and the, oh my gosh, stats every week, but I mean, it's under the talent around him. I think there's potential there too. It would help if they caught passes, but you just see little things that make you feel like, all right, there's a lot to work with here. Wow, what can happen with a winter and a spring as he springboards into the summer?
Yeah, what does it say about our recent history with quarterbacks that the last two games he's completing about 70% of his passes for 500-some yards, 4 touchdowns, and no interceptions? And my response has been, it's pretty good. Pretty good.
I mean, he never puts the ball in danger either. He got hit a couple times today. The ball never came out. I think of one throw last week where it was kind of nervy where he tried to go over top some defenders and in between some defenders. But I can't even think of one 50-50 ball here today that was kind of made you hold your breath. And if it was, it was because the defensive back jumped and made a really good play. I could think of one play on the final drive, but it wasn't close to an interception. It was where it had to be, and the defender just made a good play. I think that, again, he makes his snaps count. Took a couple sacks today that maybe weren't great, but putting the ball in play is a big part of offense, and he does that pretty well.
And I think it would do even better if, like you said, there weren't as many drops. I don't really recall many in the first half, and I think Brown kind of alluded to that after the game, noting specifically that there were four after halftime. It's not a lot of help there, but Brown was right, 28 of 38 with four drops out of those 10 misses. So if he's going to put it in play, then somebody else has got to help him too.
Something else too, they put the end zones 100 yards apart vertically. And I think that you typically reach one quicker if you head that way. And I think if you head to the sideline, that's bad. That's where you get water or where you get a fan or where you get yelled at by your coaches. And for some reason, West Virginia ran a lot of these plays where they threw the ball outside, parallel or behind the line of scrimmage. And golly, they just didn't work out today.
Mike, are you being facetious?
No.
I think I know exactly which one you're, a couple of plays you're talking about here, but I agree. Yeah. Well, I'm not talking about the actual throws went sideline to sideline. I was thinking of also a couple that were guys caught the ball and then ran towards the sideline instead of upfield. But yes, a dozen or so screen passes out into the flat.
Can you defend it or can you explain it? Because I think I can, but I also think that we're this far in, it's not something they do good. And if you see that tunnel screen again, I think we need to shoot a road flare into the sky and get some help.
I think it's mostly because there's no run game. And I think, coaches, especially offensive coaches, like to think of those screen passes, those quick passes as a substitute for the run game. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not, but eventually they're going to catch on and you have to actually develop a real live run game. So
I agree and I disagree in some regard here. A very sieve defense that was forgiving and friendly that you could throw the ball over top of. They did a bunch of stuff where they blitzed a lot. The defensive coordinator likes to blitz, but they give up a lot of plays, and West Virginia had good looks at many of them and connected by and large on many of them too. And I can understand that you're going to have to throw the ball in the flats, whether to running backs or on screen plays, and you're going to have to use that 53 and a third to your full advantage. But that's if like you're worried about teams being concentrated in the middle. And you kind of are, but like I think you can also stretch the team the other way. And if you can pull safeties back, make them gather base a little bit with vertical passes, that might work. And I'm not saying they didn't try that. They threw the ball and pushed it a couple times, but nothing they did unclogged the middle here. For the 600th time, and we can get the confetti and the ticker tape here. Chris, what's wrong with the running game?
They can't block. They can't run. Oftentimes they're having bad reads on how many defenders are in the box, whether to check in or even on run pass options or read options, some poor decisions. You name it, I think it's all going wrong.
Kind of a kitchen sink game too, where I think they tried to do a bunch of things, tried outside, tried inside. Didn't see a draw, I don't think. But I was also surprised we saw very little of the motion behind the play that might have pulled people out of there. And, Winston Wright, I can't really remember doing anything in that regard. Flipped, I think, the formation just a handful of times, but still tried it. And just things weren't working there. And it kind of, it blew up in spectacular fashion where it was going so poorly that I don't think that they wanted to run the ball near the goal line. And, at the end, kicking a field goal when you're on the one, instead of having the touchdown on the Sam James reception or punching it in there on one of your three snaps, is a significant difference in the game. Let's start there. Should Sam James have a touchdown, or is that close enough where it's hard to give it to him?
I thought it was a touchdown at the time. When I saw the replay, I don't understand how his knee didn't touch the ground, but it didn't. And so unless they've changed the rule and now the side of your ankle is considered down, because that I feel like that's the only thing that touched the ground before his butt touched the ground. And when his butt touched the ground, the ball was already in the end zone. So, I think that was just a terrible call.
I believe what they'll say is that shin counts as down. Was his shin down, though? I did not have a good look at it in the monitors, in the press box, and the stadium scoreboard, while big and of high definition, didn't really give me a good look at it either. But was his shin even down?
I don't think so. I mean, you're getting closer. Like I said, I feel like it was that the bone, your ankle bone that sticks out. That looks like that might have been on the ground, and that was it. And but even still, when that was on the ground, the ball was at about the 3-inch line, and they put it out at, you know, 3/4 of a yard, which still, you got to get it in, punch it in from 3/4 of a yard out. But
yeah, if that is ruled a touchdown on the field, it doesn't get overturned, right?
No, no chance.
Let's talk about just the bad luck of West Virginia. I would think that, I mean, certainly more often than not, so let's just say 6 times out of 10, you're going to call that a touchdown on the field. The referee says, I have replay in my back pocket. I'm going to call it down. We'll review it. If it's bad, it's bad. They review it. It's not confirmed. The call stands. That's bad luck because you're on the bad side of the coin there. And then this is what happens to teams that are, I don't know, I don't want to say inept, but not good at running the ball. You have to get inventive and you have to get creative. West Virginia does not do a lot of quarterback sneaks. They practice it once during the week. Got too high on one, got too low on the other, got nothing. And then, again, if you have to make things happen and you try to make the problem go away as opposed to fix it, what you do is you try to go unbalanced on the left side of the line. So you put 2 guards and a tackle to the left of the center, except one of your guards forgets. I don't know how that happens. And you're left with a fire drill right before the play clock goes down and everybody panics and all of a sudden you get a false start. Now it's 3rd and goal from the 6 and your quarterback gets his arm clipped on what probably would have been a touchdown to Sam James in the back. When it's going bad, it's going bad. When it rains, it pours. And that was a pretty good indictment of the season there.
Yes, it was. I tweeted it as soon as I said, man, that seems like a bad call, but it's inside the 1, so it shouldn't matter. And as soon as I typed, it shouldn't matter, I thought, well, it might, because I was about to say 3rd and short, but anything in short, West Virginia seems to just have trouble with. And what did you think of the 2 QB sneaks?
Don't like it.
Okay. I didn't like how it just wasn't creative enough. I'm okay with the first one, I think. I am okay with the call on the first one. I'm not okay with how it went down, but they were getting no push. The offensive line was getting no push at all. They really didn't have a chance. I thought it probably might have been in, but it's hard to tell. I can't believe they didn't check that on replay too, but they're already having a bunch of replays as it was. So, that's tough. Failed QB sneak, and then a miscommunication, missed lineup, false start, brutal. Only thing that would have topped it off would have been missing the field goal.
Yeah, so thanks to Evan Staley, we don't have a complete car fire there. So that was good. I think what I don't like about sneak is just all the new parts. That's a tough thing for any center to do. Parents playing with a bad shoulder, and that's hard to play that spot there when you got to push and that center is right above you and you're really dealing with 2 or 3 guys because they're coming right through the middle. So that's a hard thing to ask the first time. The second time, I don't know, you figure it's better than a 50-50 play, you would think. So you're going to get probably the second one. It didn't. I'm almost surprised they didn't do it a third time just because that would have been great to watch and see what happened there. But again, that did kind of matter there. And just kind of a prolonged problem for them this season. Red zone opportunities and not exactly what they want to do. In there 3 times today, 2 scores, no touchdowns, 2 field goals. And in the end, right down to the very last possession of the game, fittingly, that's where the game ends and that's where the bowl eligibility ends, just because they couldn't do it. And going to be something they're going to have to work on too. I'm not saying they don't work on it now too, but just the efficiency rate has to get a lot better there too. Go ahead.
Are you growing concerned with, because I brought this up at the Kansas State game. It was Kansas State, because I said I was locked and loaded to roast Neil Brown about his use and non-use and misuse of timeouts and clock management. And you laughed. but I don't think you were laughing at me because I was wrong. I think you laughed just because it's just like, hey, they won. But here it is again, that last play. And he addressed it head on in postgame, saying he just figured it was the last drive, so he was going to call timeouts and use them and use it as the last opportunity. I don't agree. I'm growing concerned because this is multiple times this year where there were situations where West Virginia should have had multiple plays ready to go if they didn't say, hey, if we convert, we're doing this. If we don't convert, we're doing that. And they used two timeouts back-to-back on short yardage plays, and then came in and substituted on after the second timeout or after the first timeout, which resulted in the long substitution from Oklahoma State and forcing WVU to use a second timeout. I mean, you're killing your chances there. If you're limiting yourself to just one opportunity. And I can't say I agree with several of these instances that have happened this year.
I like prolonging the game as much as I can, which is why I think if they had scored, they're not going to go for two. Get it to overtime and give yourself a chance. And I think that you could really argue that West Virginia was playing okay, especially if they scored there, that you can throw the ball, you can do some things. The trouble is that eventually that ball is going to get inside the 20 and everybody's got a shot collar apparently and can't function the way they're supposed to. So that might have gone bad in overtime. I'm not really sure. What was curious about the timeout decision was that he made his mind up. I think he said this after the game too, that once it got to be about 3 minutes, he's like, this is the last time we're going to get it. And we can beg to differ there too, because let me ask you this. If they got on like 4th and 10 with 2 minutes and 10 seconds left or something like that, you kick the field goal if you got 3 timeouts, right? Maybe you get a stop there. I don't know. There's a way you can look at that. I'm not sure what his chart or his analytics says. But burning one, I'm okay with, because you have your plan. And he's saying, this was 4 down territory. This is the last time we're going to get it. Never mind that your defense has done okay. But I think Hubbard was huffing and puffing there, and he was going to be able to move the chain. So I'm okay with that. I just find it hard to believe that, as organized as they seem to be and as much as I'm sure they practice these things, they have that long timeout and they don't have two plays called, or that they don't have a play that doesn't require a substitution. And that was what was strange to me, because, like, if you need those 2 yards and you don't get on the first one, you still need short yardage. You're going to have short yardage personnel. So why isn't short yardage personnel in the game? That just seems strange to me. It would have been a harder thing, or excuse me, not short yardage, long yardage personnel. You don't need short yardage personnel there. So what are you doing? Like, why are you running guys out there? Are you going to run tight ends in there, fullbacks in, because you need guys? It was just a weird thing. So it was just a bad situation there. It was untoward, I think. They're playing and they have an idea what they want to do, and it just doesn't work. They need 2 yards and they don't get it going on and just subbing. And you can complain about how slow and deliberate Oklahoma State was coming off the sideline, sure. But when you open the window, sometimes a burglar is going to come through. And if you don't leave that opening, then you have a better chance. So I'm just surprised that they weren't more organized and they're more expeditious on between their 3rd and 4th down snaps there.
I want to throw out one more stat about the offense real quick, because I really want to talk about this defense and the job that Vic Koenig's done.
Yep.
Average 3rd down distance to go. Can you give me a guess what you think it was for West Virginia? On 3rd down, what was their average distance to get to a 1st down?
Well, how many did they have is a good question.
14. 14 third downs.
Man, that's probably too many for them. I'm going to say it's probably like more than 7.
8.4.
Yeah, it felt like 7 was a big number for the day, yeah.
So, yeah, they're on average, they were facing 3rd and 8.4 yards to go. And that's, again, that goes back to the run game. And you're putting a lot of pressure on Daigie and on this pass game, on those receivers to be as efficient as possible. And they're not always going to be able to bail out, you know, no run game. So,
Kennedy McCoy had an interesting day.
How do you define interesting?
He had, let me see here. He had 3 carries for 11 yards,
mm-hmm.
6 catches for 16 yards. That's 9 touches for 29 yards, which is different. I guess you can almost kind of count that as one, because he's basically catching passes on running plays, similar to what Hubbard did. Hubbard, I think he had 11 catches coming in, and he had 7 today. 7 for 88. So he ends up with almost 200 yards for a scrimmage. But also, not just to hang us on McCoy, James, 7 catches for 36 yards. Simmons, 3 for 37. These are guys who are important and who just aren't really moving the chains or aren't getting freed up in the space. And I understand the part of the plan was, like, let's spread them out and try to create some seams or let's do some stuff after the catch. But those are players who are kind of high-volume touches that you like high-volume yardage out of, and it just didn't come through today. It just kind of felt like they were handcuffed, and some of those screens looked like they were going to get 15 yards, and they got 3.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top 5 leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
I've gone down the rabbit hole while you were talking. Mm-hmm. The 8.4 yards for West Virginia on third down to go. Since the beginning of October, when West Virginia started losing after they started 3-1, these are the average third down distance to go for first down: 8.4, 8.2, 8.7, 8.5, 8, and 7.3. I mean,
and you know what's funny is I bet you I would like to also know this: how many started on 2nd and 1 or 2nd and 3?
I'm going to need you to go off on a longer diatribe before I can get all that information.
Well, I'll do that for a second because I'm also replaying. I'm kind of fact-checking live here. I was talking about the third down, fourth down play of the timeout, and I'm confused here for a second, but correct me if I'm wrong. The third down timeout was on 3rd and 1, right? And they ended the game on 3rd and 12. Okay, I corrected myself and said you should have a packaging that was more indicative of 2 plays for the down and distance. And again, if it's 3rd and 1, and you know you're going to go for it on 4th down, when you call that timeout, why are you subbing? Like, you're still, if you don't get the first down on 3rd down, you're going to go for it on 4th down. It's still needing a yard. Why are you subbing? You should have the same personnel package in. And again, you open that window and they're going to take advantage of it. So again, if it was 3rd and 1 or 3rd and 11, if you don't get it, you're going to need the same personnel on the field. I don't understand why you had to sub there. I think that's what I was trying to say. And I confused myself with how the game ended. But either way, whatever the situation is, it just seems strange. And I think we can paint a portrait at the end of the season based on all the colors on our palette right now of different clock management things that we've seen and we've disagreed with. But I think that's something that he kind of touched on that, well, I'm not exactly sure what the question was, but he said, like, I had a lot of things going on at that time. I wasn't paying attention. I forget what the question was, but he said that, and it was in relation to some sort of sequence of events in the game. And, you know, he's talked about it before, too. He wasn't watching the play clock against Baylor because he was working on what do I do at the kickoff, you know, what's personnel direction, things like that. That's hard for a head coach. And this is something that Holgorsen eventually begged out of, too, where he wasn't going to be in charge of everything. He wasn't going to manage everything. And he was going to kind of be the CEO and let his staff do things here. Are these, you know, apples and apples? I don't know. Are they apples and oranges? I don't think so. And I wonder in the offseason when he kind of does an audit of everything, hey, we're going to spend a lot of our spring on short yardage, or hey, we're going to spend a lot of our spring on red zone offense and defense. But I wonder if he looks at game management things and says, hey, Blake Seiler, you call everything on special teams. Hey, Sean Reagan, you're going to be in charge of when we need to call timeouts in certain situations, because he's up in the booth and he's not going to be distracted by stuff, right, by extracurriculars or anything there. He's kind of in a sterile environment. I just wonder if that's part of the calculus of the offseason there. And I also wonder if that's even fair, because he's not a first-year coach. This is his 5th year as a head coach. I would assume he's had his hands in the levers and the buttons all the time, and he's probably comfortable with it. But whereas Holgorsen was a first-time head coach, and it took him, what, 6 years before he delegated? So I don't know, maybe we're 2 years away from Brown doing that. I'm not sure, but I do wonder if that's part of his self-scout in the offseason of, hey, how do we become more efficient where we're not calling timeouts down the play clock, or I'm catching things earlier, or, you know, and now we're also adding check with knee stuff at the line of scrimmage, so that's another thing on his plate. I'm just curious if there's an honest answer to what I think is an honest question.
Well, you know who's going to get an A-plus during this postseason audit? Vic Koning.
Excellent.
Because another amazing day today, and I, not only was it great, I mean, you're shutting down. I understand that Oklahoma State had a backup quarterback, but Drew Brown is not your typical backup quarterback. He started for almost 2 years at Hawaii. He was brought in, was expected to be the starter at Oklahoma State. And they have Chuba Hubbard, who's going to be one of the most prolific rushers in NCAA history. He leads the nation in rushing right now. He's amazing. They have a lot of weapons on offense. And they just held them to 20 points. They held Chuba Hubbard to one of his worst outputs per rush in his career. And this is becoming a trend now. And where would you say West Virginia's defensive two deep ranks in the Big 12? It last, second to last, like as far as depth and experience goes?
Well, I can think of eight that are better right off the top of my head, just because talent, recruiting, results, injury report, whatever. I think Kansas is probably a parallel situation, and I can't speak specifically to them. I don't know what they have going on as far as who's available, who's not, but they've taken some blows during this season too. So let's say that West Virginia's the worst and tied, and no one's worse in the situation they have right now. It's ridiculous too. And you know, this is minor stuff, but like I think Tyke Smith played every snap today. And if not, it was darn close, because there's no backup there now. And like their situation with Will is Chandler, who is just coming back, and he played darn near every snap today. And you don't have, like, not to tout here, but like Quantel Reigns, probably gone from the program, could have played 12 or 15 snaps today. And I think that's a guy that like thought he was moving up and doing better things because they made him a Will. He could have probably helped out some there today. Did they win because of him? No, I don't think. But like my point is that you add these things up that are small, and you look at him and you look at another guy who's hurt or another guy that's injured, another guy who can't play, and guys from the sideline are watching, it's and like guys who have fallen off during the season, and you put together all those little things, and it's a big ball that they're missing out there right now too. It's just a gap in so many areas. So it's depleted and not getting better right now either. I'm wondering who they played today. I don't think Jalen Thornton played. He was in uniform. I think Corey Turner played a bunch. I don't think Tavian Mayo played. Not that he would have helped, but like even the guys who they thought might be able to give him a boost, like a Dre Miller or something like that, just not ready yet, not there yet. So you know, it's leaking a little bit, and those holes are getting bigger. But still successful.
Yeah, and you'd have to. I mean, this goes to my greater point of it's frustrating to see that. Like, you know, like I was talking about, the fans are raising the bar because West Virginia is doing things, and they're expecting it to be the next step after that. They shut down this offense. Yeah. They shut down Hubbard for three quarters and kind of gave up a little bit in the fourth. You know, I think Hubbard averaged like 5 or 6 yards per carry in the fourth, which is a decent chunk. And obviously, if you're giving up that kind of yardage, you're not going to win. But before that, it was 1.7. So they were doing something well for a long time. And the fact that Koning can do this with so many departures, so many injuries, and maybe the worst, not the worst, worst is such a bad word. Because I think, you know, some of these guys that are starting would start at almost every team in the Big 12 right now.
Most inflicted.
Yeah. And he's doing so much with it. The idea of him in a year or two having a real legit two deep and running his scheme has to be exciting for West Virginia fans and frightening for the rest of the conference, I think.
I think it's cool to think about what they're going to be able to do recruiting in the next year or two with defensive line. I think you can make a similar argument for kind of challenging guys in the secondary that, hey, come and play here. You're going to play really good receivers, and you're going to have to tackle against the run. So if you're a corner, your safety, that might be inviting. Linebacker's curious. I don't think that they have the footage or the guy. They don't have the baseball card, so to speak, to hand to a recruit and say, hey, come be our bandit. It's going to look like this. They may have their guy in Jared Bartlett, though. Linebacker, it's just such a messy situation right now, too, that's going to be hard to get. And, again, you kind of want guys who are physically mature who are going to play those linebacker spots. And I really think that even if you have a good defensive line, you have a good secondary, run game stuff and intermediate stuff, it's just a lot better if you have linebackers. And do you foresee this being an issue moving forward? I feel like that's the slowest one to piece together in the depth chart, even though you really don't want freshman defensive linemen playing. But I think you can fix that with junior college. Same thing in the secondary, and I think that we've seen freshmen can play in the secondary. You don't want a lot of them. I get that. But I just feel like the linebacker thing may be slower to come around.
Yeah, they've made some interesting moves at linebacker. I think they're offering – the focus seems to be on picking up more bandits, interestingly enough. I think there's been a couple guys that they've targeted at the junior college level that are either defensive ends or edge-rushing linebackers. And quite frankly, I think they're in a good position to land a couple of them. But we're really not seeing a lot of, say, interior guys, true Mike linebackers or guys that – almost exclusively play linebacker at the high school level, because we're seeing those edge rush types, guys that maybe are kind of bigger like defensive ends, and then safeties who, I'm not comparing anybody to anybody here, but the last guy I remember that was just a true safety that they wanted as a linebacker was David Long, and that worked out all right. So I don't say you have to play linebacker in high school, but there aren't a lot of linebackers on the recruiting board right now, and I feel like that is a big area of need for this team. I mean, granted, how many of those injuries on this year's team were to linebackers too? So that could change things as well.
Yeah, and the problem is that it's a 60-minute game, and Oklahoma State didn't beat them with the quantity of snaps, but they kind of did some tricky stuff. Like the drive they went ahead on, they let Brown take control. And he was 6-7 for 45 yards, and he was playing quick, and they were running snaps. And you could kind of tell that was pushing and pushing and pushing West Virginia closer and closer to the edge. And then Hubbard, we wrote about this and talked about this. He's just good in the third and fourth quarter. And, you know, I think he had 8 carries for 47 yards in the fourth quarter. It was pretty good. He had 17 carries in the second half. So you could almost kind of tell that early on they realized, you know what, we may have weather. It's chilly. This is not going to be a track meet out here today. West Virginia's defense can't play. We have a backup quarterback. This is going to be low scoring, and, you know, it's going to come down to one or two possessions. And I think they said, we have one of the best singular players in the country. Let's see what we can do. And he ended up with a good all-around game there, not up to his standard, but enough. And they kind of trusted it, and it worked. And, again, just made those one or two plays that really mattered. And it didn't blow him away. His long run was 13. But just kind of did the things he had to do and got him in position to do stuff that really mattered. Two things that I think are important. I just want to put this in perspective. Jeopardy had 20 touchdowns coming in. 20 touchdowns, right? If you add up the yardage on his 20 touchdowns, just the 20 touchdowns, he has more yardage on touchdown runs than McCoy and Letty Brown had, period, coming into the game. So that's how good and how bad those two respective sides have been. But also, 13 yards for him is amazing. Like, that doesn't happen. That's like a typical carry for him sometimes. And also, Oklahoma State had scored a 50-yard touchdown in 6 straight games, and their long play today was a screen pass to Hubbard for 46, where it probably should have been canned, if not in the backfield, and pretty close. So even though Vic has one of the most effective defenses in the Big 12, they took away what the other team did well. They really made them work hard and work long and go to the finish line here today.
Yeah, I was going to say that one screen pass I felt like was the one bad, quote-unquote, play for that defense through almost three quarters. Because, man, that came on that first drive, and I saw it in the effort from a couple people, a couple of those standing straight up arm tackles and a couple others kind of just floating into blocks and dancing with guys and getting right out of the play. I thought, oh man, this is not a good sign. This is going to be the start of the Texas Tech game all over again. And then they came out and played amazing for the next handful of drives, right up until that final touchdown drive. I don't think the effort wasn't there. I just think they got tempo. They got tired. Oklahoma State picked up the pace and made some quick passes and just kept on going, getting chunk yards.
It's just good coaching, and that's what you do. You find a weakness, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait, and you do it. That just happens. Second play from scrimmage, Hubbard darn near scored on. And, I mean, the cutback was there, and he was wide open on the left side. They had an outflank on the right, and he was wide open on the left side. And Kerry Martin made a great tackle, and I think he was probably pretty good today. Probably made everybody feel better because tackling has not been his strong suit. I have him for nine tackles, and that's a guy that you're going to have do that stuff. So that was important. A lot of solo stops where he was by himself there. That was good too. So interesting. Also interesting, flea flicker.
It was too far away, wasn't it?
Miserable. Yeah. You got to be inside the 20 to do that. So I'm sure we'll have to talk about that at our fan club meeting this week too. So a lot to feel optimistic about, but I think the bummer here is that you allowed 20 points and you really handled a good running back, but a team that scored 20, played with a backup quarterback, and didn't have a up-to-par day from its star player, still escapes with a win, and you had the ball at the end. Really not a great way to wrap up the home season here, which – as was pointed out, the Brown featured zero conference wins. The highlight is a home win against NC State, which appears to be a pretty bad team now. Kind of a mixed bag of things. The best performances and certainly the best win, I think, have come away from home. They'll close next week. They'll close the season at TCU on a Friday. Not as exciting. It could have been really cool if both those teams were playing for a bowl, but only one gets it. It almost becomes like a playoff game, but this is going to be an awkward week for West Virginia. How do you think this goes, and what do you think the challenge is for coaches and players, knowing that, you know, that carrot is no longer at the end of the stick?
It's going to be tough. You know, away game, the carrot's gone. Guys aren't going to give up. That's not a thing. I mean, I think there's some effort that might disappear a little bit, just kind of naturally, but guys aren't going to say, screw it, I don't care. They may not know they're giving less effort, but I'm most interested to see if maybe there's a couple more changes. Maybe there's a couple more young guys that get a little more opportunity now that, you know, there's nothing to lose, so to speak. I think we know the redshirt situation with everybody, so it's not like anybody can and can't play. And there might be a couple guys that get a few more snaps.
I'm reminded of, like, Thanksgiving when you would go home in college or your college years afterward and you would play like that Thursday morning or Wednesday afternoon game with your friends, and it would just be just helter skelter, and you know, your aunt lets your uncle play and he's playing quarterback and you're running double passes and things you've never seen before, and it ends up being a lot of fun. I just wonder how much creativity or ingenuity or just wacky stuff we could see there, because you can't really do anything that's going to change the way people feel about the season. If you win, great, but that's fleeting because you go into the offseason right after that. If you lose, hey, it's a lost season. I don't think anybody's going to be too upset or too excited about anything. It could be kind of fun. I think it'd be fun to see what Daigie can do against Gary Patterson's defense. The good thing is that there's no school. You can exceed 20 hours a week and do what you want. The bad thing is this is a team that really can't even practice the way it wants to right now just because of numbers and things, so they're not even be able to take advantage of that. Also, a shorter week. They're traveling on Thursday. It's a tough spot. I would be surprised if they're sharp or, overly impressive. I'd be really surprised if they were flat and laid an egg, but I think you're right. I think there's a lot of challenges here, and, you know, the final challenge in a season like this is always going to be hard to overcome. And it ain't Mexico either, so.
No.
No offense to my fans in Fort Worth.
No, it is not.
Chris, let's wrap it up here. What do you have coming up on the website?
I will have my final Big 12 power or penultimate Big 12 power rankings tomorrow. I will have some visitor reaction. There were a handful of visitors on campus, several of them of the walk-on variety, younger kids. At least one key official visitor in junior college cornerback Jackie Matthews. That's one to keep an eye on. I think he's obviously going to get the pitch of, hey, Washington or Bailey are gone. You could step right in and compete for a starting job. Come here. And then we'll move on to next week. Like you said, games on Friday instead of Saturday. So a lot of our stuff's going to be moved up a day, and we'll have team coverage. And then basketball stuff going on. Tuesday night, right?
Is that so? Wow.
I think so.
How do you feel about this tournament, by the way? The fact that they had to pay $85,000 for the two teams that has played. They had to pay for all of their travel and accommodations down there. It's wild.
So, yeah, I don't understand it. I don't understand it. If West Virginia, I assume they make some money off of it, right? Because they get to keep the receipts from the home games.
Keep the gate, but I think they had $10,000 there last night, actually. So, and they also charged me more for my Cobb salad, which I'm very upset about because that is a that is an after the fact change in the pricing schedule. I'm not a fan of, but that's how they're going to make money on this, I guess. But yeah, I mean, you keep your gate. I'm very curious how much money they keep out of that. Like, do they make $86,000 last night?
Well, that's what I'm going to ask you. I mean, if they didn't do this Cancun thing, they'd just have a regular home game, right? Or are they limited?
They just have regular. If you do that, then you're not going to be able to get 31 regular season games, and I think, right?
Okay.
You're only allowed to play 31 if you play a tournament like this. So they're going to play one every year, but almost always you're comped for this stuff. I have a theory about this that I'll tell you offline. It's too hot for the podcast, but it's something I'm going to have to dig into. But it's a really weird arrangement. Every time I ask about it, people go, "Oh, Mike." My answer is yeah. There's nothing beyond that. It's just like, oh, that's you again, Mike. I'm like, no, but you're paying $170,000 to play these games. Like, one team could have beat you and one team wasn't very good. I mean, that's okay, but like, I doubt they're making money on it. This is after they paid for CPI games. It's just a weird finance that I've never encountered before.
Hey, don't worry, fans.
Too often.
When after Mike tells me, I'll post it on the Earsports VIP Plus section of the site. So don't worry.
So I'll have three things in the morning, follow through with what the heck happened on that goal line sequence there, the bad things that kind of derailed that possession and kind of, again, illustrated the entire season in one small sequence. Then we'll get into some Jared Diggie stuff on Monday. And then our Football Tuesday will actually be Monday this week. And Chris, you and I have to huddle about our holiday schedule and then when we're going to do our podcast and whether or not you like cranberries in a can or cranberries in the traditional sense.
Neither.
Oh,
that is
the wrong answer.
The answer is always mac and cheese. That's my vegetable of choice or fruit of choice. No, that's a fruit. Mac and cheese
is a fruit.
No, mac and cheese. Hey,
I know it's not a fruit.
I know it's not a fruit too, but it's my side of choice. It's going to be my vegetable. It'll be my vegetable while mashed potatoes will be my fruit, even though I know potatoes are not fruits, but those are my sides.
We can do a fantasy draft of our menu on whatever day we actually do this, but we are out of time here. So that's all for this time. We will see you next time for earsports.com. I am Mike Casasso.
And I'm Chris Anderson.
We'll see you later.